And welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, August 28th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. Families for George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Eric Garner, Jacob Blake, and other black men and women recently killed and wounded by police joined thousands of protesters at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington to push for criminal justice reform on this anniversary of the original 1963 March on Washington. President Donald Trump grants a full pardon to Alice Johnson, who is black and who spent over 20 years in prison for a nonviolent drug offense. The president had previously given Ms. Johnson a commutation of her sentence. She spoke at the recently completed Republican National Convention. And this comes after a day after the president himself gave the final speech in front of the White House at the convention, making law and order a central theme of his reelection pitch. The House Foreign Affairs Committee launching contempt proceedings against Secretary of State Mike Pompeo for what it says is his repeated refusal to cooperate with the committee's investigations, including the impeachment inquiry against President Trump. And cleanup continues from Hurricane Laura. We'll get an update from Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards. Washington Post reporting thousands of protesters gathered Friday at the Lincoln Memorial to call for criminal justice reform and racial equality while honoring the 57th anniversary of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream address from the same location. The march was dubbed the Get Your Knee Off Our Necks March on Washington. It's a reference to how George Floyd was killed by a police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota earlier this year. One of the speakers was 12-year-old Yolanda Renee King, the granddaughter of Martin Luther King.
Some of you may remember that 2 years at the March for Our Lives, I said, spread the word. Have you heard? All across the nation, we are going to be a great generation. That was in 2018. I didn't know what would hit us in 2020. A pandemic that shut our schools and put our young lives on hold. More killings of unarmed black people by police. Attacks on our right to vote. The worst economic crisis since the Great Depression that we learned about in school. And more extreme weather than ever before. But great challenges produce great leaders. We have mastered the selfie and TikToks. Now we must master ourselves. Less than a year before he was assassinated, my grandfather predicted this very moment. He said that we were moving into a new phase of the struggle. The first phase was the civil rights, and the new phase is genuine equality. Genuine equality is why we are here today and why people are coming together all across the world, from New Zealand to New Jersey. He said that we must not forget the days of Montgomery. We must not forget the sit-ins movements. We must not forget the freedom rides, the Birmingham movement, and Selma. Papa King, we won't!
Yolanda Renee King. Today's march at the Lincoln Memorial was hosted by the National Action Network. The founder and president is the Reverend Al Sharpton.
They keep telling me about how it's a shame that black parents have to have the conversation with our children, how we have to explain if a cop stops you, don't reach for the glove compartment, don't talk back, the conversation. Well, we've had the conversation for decades. It's time we have a conversation with America. We need to have a conversation about your racism, about your bigotry, about your hate, about how you would put your knee on our neck while we cry for our lives. We need a new conversation. Oh, we didn't come to start trouble. We came to stop trouble. You act like it's no trouble to shoot us in the back. You act like it's no trouble to put a chokehold on us while we scream, "I can't breathe," 11 times. You act like it's no trouble to hold a man down on the ground until you squeeze the life out of him. It's time for a new conversation. I wondered why. I asked Dr. Dyson, why did they have the march at Lincoln's Memorial? Why didn't they go to the Jefferson Memorial? Why didn't they go to the Washington Monument? And he told me, you got to understand, Reverend Al, 100 years before 63, 1963 was 1863. 1863, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. He promised us full citizenship if we fought to save the Union. He promised us 40 acres and a mule. We never got the full citizenship. We never got the reparations. We come to Lincoln because you promised, Mr. Lincoln, and the promise has been broken. And we come like Dr. King came 57 years ago to say we are tired of broken promises. Some say to me, Reverend Al, y'all ought to denounce those that get violent, those that are looting. All of the families have denounced looting. What we haven't heard is you denounce shooting. We will speak against the looting, but when will you speak against wrong police shooting?
Reverend Al Sharpton, leader of the National Action Network, which organized today's program. Planning started a couple of months ago after the funeral service of George Floyd. Since then, there have been more cases getting national attention, including just last week, Jacob Blake shot in the back multiple times and paralyzed by an officer in Kenosha, Wisconsin. His father, Jacob Blake Sr., spoke today.
No justice! No justice! No justice! Jacob Blake! Jacob Blake! Jacob Blake! There are two systems of justice in the United States. There's a white system and there's a black system. The black system ain't doing so well. But we're gonna stand up. Every black person in the United States is going to stand up. We're tired. I'm tired of looking at cameras and seeing these young black and brown people suffer. We're going to hold court today. We're going to hold court on systematic racism. We're going to have court right now. Guilty. Yeah. Guilty! 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 Racism against all of us. Guilty!
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 Racism against Trayvon Martin. We find them guilty.
Guilty!
Racism against George Floyd. We find them guilty.
Guilty!
Racism against Jacob Blake. Abdul Dawala. If I said the name wrong, Allah forgive me. Guilty!
Guilty!
And we're not taking it anymore. I ask everyone to stand up. No justice!
No justice!
No justice!
No peace!
I met this man when I was 7 years old. How did I know I was going to meet this man again in these circumstances? I truly did not want to come and see y'all today for these reasons. My father was in town for the first march on D.C. I have a duty. I have a duty to support and understand each one. I love everybody in this crowd. I love you. If nobody told you today, Big Jake loves you. But we're going to stand up, baby. We're going to stand up together. I need your strength. Big Daddy's legs ain't that good anymore. I need your strength. No justice.
No peace.
No justice.
No peace.
I love y'all.
Jacob Blake Sr. at today's march. After the speeches at the Lincoln Memorial, the protesters marched to the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial in West Potomac Park. There were also precautions taken today due to the coronavirus pandemic. Those in the crowd had their temperatures taken and were required to wear masks, also encouraged to social distance. This is Washington Today. Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Senator Kamala Harris commenting today on the Jacob Blake case and what should happen to the officer who fired the shots. Senator Harris was on NBC's Today Show.
As a former prosecutor and someone who worked closely with police for years, is there a scenario in which that officer would have been justified, was justified in firing his weapon?
Craig, I don't see it, but I don't have all the evidence. You know, the man was going to his car. He didn't appear to be armed. And if he was not armed, the use of force that was 7 bullets coming out of a gun at close range in the back of the man, I don't see how anybody could reason that that was justifiable.
Do you think the officer should be charged?
I think that there should be a thorough investigation, and based on what I've seen, it seems that the officer should be charged.
There are a lot of folks who are saying, here's a man who wouldn't follow police commands. Law enforcement tried to use a taser. He apparently is reaching into a car where a knife was later found. And because of those reasons, we should reserve judgment and the officer should be afforded due process. What would you say to those people who are saying that?
Everyone should be afforded due process. I agree with that completely. But here's the thing. In America, we know these cases keep happening. And we have had too many black men in America who have been the subject of this kind of conduct. And it's got to stop.
Senator Kamala Harris, Democratic vice presidential nominee on NBC Friday morning. President Donald Trump has not addressed the shooting of Jacob Blake. Questions from reporters the past week have not been answered. But the president has remarked on the protests in Kenosha that has occurred since. He tweeted today, success, since the National Guard moved into Kenosha, Wisconsin 2 days ago, there has been no further violence, not even a small problem. When legally asked to help by local authorities, the federal government will act and quickly succeed. Are you listening, Portland? Portland referring to Portland, Oregon. This law and order theme was a central point in his speech Thursday night at the Republican National Convention as he spoke in front of the White House. Here's a few minutes of it.
We must remember that the overwhelming majority of police officers in this country, and that's the overwhelming majority, are noble, courageous, and honorable. We have to give law enforcement, our police, back their power. They are afraid to act. They are afraid to lose their pension. They are afraid to lose their jobs. And by being afraid, they are not able to do the job that they so desperately want to do for you. And those who suffer most are the great people who they protect and who they want to protect at an even higher level. When there is police misconduct, the justice system must hold wrongdoers fully and completely accountable, and it will. But when we can never have a situation where things are going on as they are today, We must never allow mob rule. We can never allow mob rule. In the strongest possible terms, the Republican Party condemns the rioting, looting, arson, and violence we have seen in Democrat-run cities all, like Kenosha, Minneapolis, Portland, Chicago, and New York, and many others, Democrat-run. There is violence and danger in the streets of many Democrat-run cities throughout America. This problem could easily be fixed if they wanted to. Just call. We're ready to go in. We'll take care of your problem in a matter of hours. Just call. We have to wait for the call. It's too bad we have to, but we have to wait for the call.
President Donald Trump speaking at the Republican National Convention on Thursday night. Some early Nielsen numbers coming in on the ratings. The president got 19.9 million Americans watching him, lower than the Democratic nominee Joe Biden, who drew 21.7 million viewers last week. Another speaker at the Republican convention on Thursday night was Alice Johnson, first-time nonviolent drug offender who was sentenced to life in prison and had served 21 years when, in 2018, President Trump commuted her sentence. This after celebrity Kim Kardashian West pleaded her case. Johnson, now a criminal justice reform advocate. Today, in the White House Oval Office, President Trump gave Alice Johnson a full pardon.
Alice Johnson has been just incredible. She's gotten out. She's recommended people to us. She knows many, many people that have been put in prison, and whether they should have been or not, she knows that they were put in for too long. Alice was given a life sentence, and you spent about 22 years, and for something that today a lot of people wouldn't even be going to jail for, and it was horrible, and we found out about it, and we gave a commutation. That means we were able to get Alice out, and she has been just so outstanding, and I'm so proud of you. And we are giving Alice a full pardon. I just told her. We didn't even discuss it. We just, you were out there. I saw you in the audience last night. And I asked the folks if you could bring Alice over. We're going to give a full pardon. We're going to do it right now. That means you have been fully pardoned. That's the ultimate thing that can happen. That means you can do whatever you want in life and just keep doing the great job you're doing. Alice has done an incredible job since she's been out. And recommending other people. We said, how many people are they like you? There's only one Alice, as far as I'm concerned, but how many people are like you or your circumstance where they were given this massive sentence and they're good people, great people? And she said, so many. They're in jail, so many. And she's looking for those people and she's recommending those people. And we've already done some that you know are good people. And they've done really well since they've been out. So we're taking Alice from a commutation to a full pardon, and I'm going to sign it right now, and we're very proud of Alice and the job you've done and what you represent. And Pastor Robert Jeffress, unrelated, but he was here, and we thought maybe I'll sign this, and then maybe you'd like to say a prayer.
I'd love to.
And maybe you could include the media, because they need it probably more than we do. They definitely need it more than Alice, that I can tell you. Okay, thank you. So, Alice, it's a full pardon. It's been signed. You might want to keep that one. And here it is.
President Donald Trump in the White House Oval Office. This is the second pardon the president has granted this week. On Tuesday, also during the Republican National Convention, he pardoned John Ponder, a bank robber who served his time and then created a reintegration program for former inmates. Washington Today will continue in a minute with more on the convention, including analysis by columnist George Will and what happened when Senator Rand Paul met protesters outside the White House. And welcome back to Washington Today. A couple of other headlines. At least part of the federal government preparing to implement President Trump's plan to defer payroll taxes. The National Finance Center, which handles payroll for thousands of federal workers, said it will begin deferring Social Security taxes for all employees who are eligible for the initiative. In a posting on the website, NFC also saying to the workers that the deferred taxes will eventually be forgiven. But that is not certain. Only Congress can do that. General Mark Milley, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, telling Congress the U.S. Armed Forces will not get involved in the election process or resolve any possible disputed vote in November. In written responses to two Democratic members of the House Armed Services Committee, Milley saying, "I believe deeply in the principle of an apolitical U.S. military." And the campaign of Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has purchased the .com web domain for President Trump's reelection slogan, Keep America Great. You go to keepamericagreat.com, you see a list of campaign promises that Joe Biden said Donald Trump broke. And now, some more thoughts on the 4 days this week of the Republican National Convention from two Washington Post columnists, George Will and Henry Olson.
I think it lived down to my expectations. The most famous words spoken during Franklin Roosevelt's long presidency were spoken about 3 minutes into the presidency. He said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. I think the theme of the Republican convention was be afraid, be very afraid. The suburbs are going to be invaded. The violence will sweep the country. And indeed, the Black Lives Matter and associated allies at this point have figured out how indeed to reelect the president if he keeps doing it. And if they keep up with the violence and the looting, and if Joe Biden can't summon the gumption and the vocabulary to speak out against it. But I think the president aimed at two groups from which he needs to make marginal gains. One is the suburbs. In 2016, 56% of the votes cast were cast in suburbs. He's doing very poorly in the suburbs. He needs to claw back some support there. Second, and this is a kind of recurring Republican effort, to improve the turnout for Republicans among African Americans. In 2012, the last time that Barack Obama was on the ballot, there was 66% turnout of eligible African American voters. In 2016, that dropped with Obama no longer on the ticket. That dropped down to 59%. If it had stayed at 66%, Mr. Trump would not have been elected in the first place. So marginal differences in small constituencies, the African American or in a particular states, can make a big difference.
Henry, what do you make of George's analysis? And also, to George's point, I mean, the message has been, be afraid, be very afraid. Will that work?
I think that George was very right, that if what you continue to see is both the fringe of the far left committing violence, looting, you know, last night, apparently, people attacked Senator Rand Paul leaving the White House, or at least according to his tweet. And if Biden can do, Biden can't do more than simply issue a ritual denunciation and not take on the leadership role he says he's uniquely capable of, it could very well do that. Because if you see one thing happening on your screens daily, and you see it spiraling out of control, and the people who are closest to that or claim to have moral authority in that side of the American political spectrum, not be able to put an end to it, that could very well work. But, you do have to look. People will remember everything that's been done over the last few years and weigh it in the balance. But facts on the ground right now, literally on the ground, do make the president's argument much more plausible than they did a month ago.
Henry Olson, and before that, George Will, both Washington Post columnists, on today's Republican Convention recap program hosted by The Post. C-SPAN covered both the Republican and Democratic conventions gavel to gavel. If you'd like to relive any of them, we have it all archived at cspan.org. And the top speeches are also available on C-SPAN's The Weekly podcast. You can download The Weekly wherever you get your podcasts. You heard mention Republican Senator Rand Paul was at the White House Thursday to hear the president's convention speech, and when he left, he found himself surrounded by protesters. He told Fox News Friday morning what happened.
We came out of the speech at the White House. We looked into the street. Our hotel was only right across the street from the White House, but we couldn't go because the mob was already chasing people down that chose to go out that exit. So the Secret Service says, get on a bus and ride to the Trump Hotel. So we got on a bus. It took 45 minutes to get through all the mobs. We get there safely, and then we say we'll get an Uber to go all the way back where we came from, and we wanted to be dropped off at the hotel. But as we got close to it, the streets were blocked and no one would let us through. And what happened is there was two blocks, and I regret that I made this decision, but I said, we're gonna walk the two blocks. We walked one block, but as we walked one block, we could see some police in the distance, but we also saw a mob of about 30 people marching and yelling. They all of a sudden saw me right as we got to the policeman, fortunately, or I don't think we'd have survived. We got to the policeman, and the policeman, I don't think, recognized me. And as they came closer, they were shouting my name, and the crowd doubled to 60. Mm. And then it doubled again to 120. And as they were surrounding us, and it got closer and closer, and everybody kept pushing back, the policemen were forming a barricade with their bodies. I whispered to the policeman, they know who I am. You've got to get reinforcements. It's going to get worse. He called for reinforcements, but we didn't get any reinforcements. We waited, but the crowd was getting bigger and bigger and pushing in. They were yelling threats. They were trying to push the police over to get to me. They were grabbing at us. And it got worse and worse and worse. And then finally we decided to make a move. I said, we've got to move. If there's not going to be reinforcements, we have to try to get to the hotel, which was another block. And they were shouting threats, you know, to us, to kill us, to hurt us. But they're also shouting, say her name, Breonna Taylor. And it's like, you couldn't reason with this mob, but I'm actually the author of the Breonna Taylor law to end no-knock raids. So the irony is lost on these idiots that they're trying to kill the person who's actually trying to get rid of no-knock raids. And they were shouting and screaming and just, it really, these people were unhinged. But I can't tell you how, I'm not sure we would have made it. So as we're walking, sort of surrounded by the police, they're attempting to push the police over to get to me. So at one point, they push a policeman backwards. He stumbles, and he's trying to catch his balance, and I catch the back of his flak jacket to stabilize him and, you know, make sure that he's okay because he's our defense. I mean, if he's down, the mob's loose on us. And you've seen the pictures of what they do to you. If the police are not there, if you defund the police, if we become Portland, if America becomes Portland, what's going to happen is people are going to be pummeled and kicked in the head and left senseless on the curb. That would have happened to us. I promise you, had we not had the D.C. police to support us, I mean, we are thankful that we have police.
Right.
And we've got to wake up. We can't have the whole country. We can't have Joe Biden rule the country and have no police.
Senator Rand Paul on Fox and Friends Friday morning. He says he believes the protesters involved were not from Washington and are, quote, sort of paid to be anarchists. He's calling on the FBI to investigate, saying people in other cities have been killed by these types of protesters. About 1,500 people attended the president's convention speech on the White House South Lawn Thursday, video showing not much social distancing and few wearing masks. Also, the White House confirms only a small number of guests who would be close to the first family were given rapid coronavirus tests. Today, local health officials in Charlotte, North Carolina, say two attendees and two staffers working at the Republican National Convention there have tested positive for the coronavirus. All of this led to this line of questioning to the White House trade advisor, Peter Navarro, who's also helping to coordinate the coronavirus response.
Sure, you've seen, sir, that coming out of Charlotte, there are some reports of some positive tests for those who participated or were involved in some way with the events for the RNC in Charlotte. When you look at what happened last night in terms of 1,500 people, very few masks, no social distancing, you were just critical of Ron Klain saying they did everything wrong. The administration set this up with no social distancing, no masks, limited masks, very few, and not widespread testing. So, should we not expect that there will be...
Who are you with, you said?
NBC.
Okay, yeah. So I thought it was interesting this morning, what I do, my protocol every morning, just so I kind of figure out what the talking points are for everybody, is to watch like the first 15, 20 minutes of six different shows. You know, Squawk Box, Maria for the financial markets. It's Morning Joe, it's New Day, Fox and Friends, and a couple others. And I thought it was really interesting that we got solid convention coverage on Fox and Friends, Squawk, on Maria Bartiromo's show, but both CNN and MSNBC went with those talking points. So I'm not going to address those. It's like here's the problem I have
I'm giving you
an answer. See, because here's my problem with the fake news. Okay, what we've got now is I think it's troubling. If I may finish, okay. You ask me a question. I'm going to answer it my way. Okay. I've been around a long time.
As have I.
Thank the Lord. Okay. And what I've seen in Russia is Pravda, which is their propaganda organ, which spreads the lies of Russia. What I've seen in communist China is things like the Global Times and the People's Daily, which spreads the lies. I never thought that this country would fracture into news outlets, which would eventually be talking points for political parties. And my answer to you, look, here's what's going to happen. It's like you're going to hector me like this, and then you're going to try to get a headline out of this. I'm telling you that MSNBC and CNN and NBC and CBS and 60 Minutes, they need to go to the mountaintop and decide whether they want to go back and cover the news like Walter Cronkite used to do, or whether they want to be talking points for the Democratic Party and Joe Biden. So I'm going to leave it at that, since I don't like arguing with folks. I'm here to give you policy perspectives.
Thank you.
White House trade advisor Peter Navarro with reporters in the White House driveway. CNN reports a well-known coronavirus model previously cited by the White House forecasts more than 317,000 U.S. deaths from COVID-19 by December. The model is from the University of Washington. Since January, according to Johns Hopkins University's tally, more than 180,000 Americans have died. There are more than 5 million cases known throughout the U.S. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards requesting expedited disaster assistance to help recover from Hurricane Laura, which made landfall late Wednesday night on the Louisiana-Texas border. The governor flew over parishes in the central and northern parts of the state surveying damage. He held a news conference at the airport in the town of Ruston and was asked to compare this hurricane to Katrina in 2005.
So I know you were saying that this is the strongest storm to hit Louisiana at this point in modern history. Is the damage anywhere nearly as severe as Katrina was 15 years ago?
Yeah, well, you got to understand, the storm was more powerful than Katrina. It came on shore 1 o'clock yesterday morning at 150 miles per hour. That is 7 miles per hour less than a Category 5. So this is a very strong Category 4. And for people out there who like to study these things, in 36 hours, Laura went from a tropical storm to a very, very strong Category 4. This rapid intensification occurred because of how warm the water was in the Gulf of Mexico and how ideal the conditions were to the formation and strengthening of that storm. Now, that's the strongest storm ever recorded. There's some estimation of a storm back in 1856 that may have matched it. I don't know how they would know that. But there might be some people around who could talk about that. I don't know. But with respect to Katrina, what I wanted to point out was it really wasn't Katrina that did the damage in New Orleans. It was the failure of the levees. New Orleans sits in a bowl, and when the levee failed, the bowl filled up with water. That's what caused all of the devastation and ultimately the death. This was actually a stronger storm, and it came on as predicted, where predicted, and when predicted. And actually, we found out that the storm surge was about 15 feet. They said 15 to 20 feet. It came in at 15 feet. But the good news is the eye of the storm never crossed west of the Calcasieu Ship Channel, and so the most forceful winds that would have blown that water out of the Gulf up the Ship Channel never happened. Because the storm stayed on the eastern side there. So the good news is we didn't have inundation 30 miles inland as they had predicted from the storm surge. But that didn't mean we didn't have tremendous devastation down there.
Governor John Bel Edwards in Ruston, Louisiana. The storm estimated to have caused from $4 billion to $12 billion in damages in Louisiana and Texas. At least 10 people have died in Louisiana, at least one in Texas from this storm. President Trump plans to see the damage for himself in Louisiana and possibly other states this weekend. On Wall Street, the Dow up 161, closing at 28,653, gaining back all of the losses of 2020. NASDAQ up 70, S&P up 23. And the Commerce Department says consumer spending increased by 1.9% in July, the third straight month of gains, but it's a slower pace than June's increase of 6.2% and May's increase of 8.6%. This has been Washington Today. Thanks for joining us. Download the free C-SPAN Radio app to take C-SPAN Radio with you and get our podcasts. Podcasts also available at cspan.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good night and weekend. We'll see you Monday.